Blog Talk Radio.
Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life to join me on the broadcast today. Today is Tuesday, October 13th, 2020. This is a very special month on The Cross in the Desert, as I am helping us to never forget and always remember the life and the tragic death of Rahane Jabari. This October 25th will be the six-year anniversary of her execution. I have been privileged to write her story, privileged to interact with people who have read her book and their lives have been transformed, and have a privilege this month to help us never forget the suffering and the cost that she paid as a woman living in Iran. This is part three of a five-part series. Last week on The Cross in the Desert, I took a step-by-step on how the culture and the religion of Islam in Iran had a drastic impact on her life and was the deciding factor in her execution. I explained that even though she said, "I was raped and attacked," this man who did it, Sorbandi, Morteza Sorbandi, was a former intelligence agent. And because of his reputation and standing in the government, Rahane's story wasn't believed. But not just that, it's because of the religion of Islam, that the testimony of a woman is only worth half that of a man. The man-centered culture in Iran, consisting of Shia religion and the Hadith, made it nearly impossible for Rahane to stand up and to be accepted and believed in the court of Iran. Today on the broadcast, I want to begin reading from my book, Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance. I want to take us back to the very last visit, the day and the night before Rahane's tragic execution. If you get my book, Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance, which is available at Amazon.com in both Kindle and paperback, you will read in the first chapter of the first few pages of the book the story of the last visit. And that's what I want to do today, to help us never forget and always remember Rahane. Chapter 1, The Last Visit, October 24th, 2014. Sholi Pakravan leaned over and gently put her hand on her mother's shoulder. Jalial had collapsed in tears and was sitting on the ground in front of the entrance of Shahr-e-Rey prison. "Let's all leave our tears here. We must be strong for Rahane." The gloomy fall day of Friday, October 24th, 2014, had begun with a phone call from the prison, instructing Sholeh and her family to immediately come and see their daughter for the last time. Rahane was scheduled to be executed at dawn on Saturday, the very next day. The last 6 months had been an agonizing, emotional rollercoaster ride for Sholeh. She had received a similar phone call back in April to come quickly to see Rahane for the very last time. Then, just a few hours later, the execution was postponed and Sholeh was able to breathe a temporary sigh of relief. Then, once again on September 30th, another phone call summoning Sholeh for a final visit, and then another unexpected postponement. The mental torment had taken its toll on both Sholeh and Rahane. Yet, they were both grateful for the incredible effect a human rights campaign was having on their desperate situation. Nazanin Afshin-Jam, an Iranian-Canadian human rights activist, had been busy spearheading an international campaign to put pressure on the regime and stop the unjust execution, working closely with two other Iranian activists, Shadi Paveh and Shabnam Asadali. Nazanin had been very successful in getting more than 200,000 signatures on an international petition. The petition had connected with millions of people all over the world of the internet, and the Iranian regime was beginning to feel the pressure. Jaliyeh, Sholeh's mother, brushed herself off and stood up from sitting on the cold, hard ground. She realized she had to be strong for her granddaughter. It could be the last time that she would ever gaze into her beautiful brown eyes and hold her in her arms. The Pakravan family slowly made their way towards the iron door that led into Sharay Ray Prison. Sharay Ray Prison, an all-women's prison located in the city of Vehrehan, Iran, which is 35 or 34 miles from Tehran, had the reputation of being labeled, quote, hell on earth, where prisoners were deprived of their human dignity and any hope of freedom. There were a total of 7 wards, with over 300 women packed together like cattle in each ward, resulting in serious overcrowding issues and the rampant spread of disease. A typical cell for the prisoners consisted of cement walls, hard cracked and dirty stone floors, with 4 rows of triple bunk beds to sleep on. There were 2 open toilets and 2 showers shared by more than 300 inmates. The air in the prison was suffocating air, and because of the lack of adequate ventilation, prisoners with respiratory diseases suffered immensely. Most prisoners died a slow and agonizing death, a type of silent execution, being withheld medical treatment. The result was those scheduled for execution, in most cases, died from their untreated diseases before they could even be transferred to be hanged. Lack of adequate medical care and lack of nutritious food added to the misery and suffering of these prisoners. A daily typical meal for each prisoner consisted of 2 loaves of stale bread and a potato. Guards at the prison were notorious for assaulting inmates, confiscating their belongings, and subjecting them to harsh interrogations. Just a few months earlier, Sholeh was shocked to learn that there had been a deadly assault on the prisoners during an unscheduled inspection. Her first concern was that Rahane had suffered injuries during the raid. She was relieved to discover that her ward had not been chosen for this surprise. The Jabari family stood facing the iron door. Sholeh had been successful in consoling her mother, Jalela. Jalela had composed herself and wiped the tears away from her eyes. Accompanying Sholeh and her mother was her husband, Feridun, Rahane's 2 younger sisters, Shahzad, 21, and Sherer, 24, and her aunt, Nafis. Together, they slowly entered through the iron door. The iron door was a different entrance from the usual one for visitations. They walked down a narrow corridor and arrived at an open door with a velvet curtain hanging down from the ceiling. At the entrance of the room, they were all bodily searched and instructed by the officer to leave their belongings in a small drawer. Sholey protested, demanding to take their personal belongings with them and leave them in the car outside of the courtyard. The officer reluctantly agreed and allowed them to return and drive their car inside the prison yard where they would temporarily store their personal belongings. Standing together in the open courtyard, Sholey gazed toward the prison manager's office, and that was the building where they were going to meet Rahane. She remembered what she had posted on her Facebook page earlier in the week as she contemplated seeing her daughter for the last time. After 7.5 years, is this how my dear child comes to an end? Taking a nervous deep breath, Sholey walked through the iron door with the glass pane. Together, they walked on the shout corridor and entered into the office building of Mr. Yousafi, the manager of the prison. Walking inside the office, Sholey noticed a large cherry wood conference table surrounded by 8 to 10 large black padded armchairs. In each corner of the room were 2 small black sofas with enough space for 4 people to sit on. Positioned in the center of the wall toward the left was a picture of Ayatollah Khamenei, the current supreme leader of Iran. A short, stocky guard stood quietly in the center of the room against the wall. 2 ladies dressed in black chadors sat quietly on one of the sofas. The room was quiet, comfortable, and brightly lit with fluorescent bulbs. Aunt Nafis was the last person to enter into the office when a clicking noise startled Sholey. 2 female security guards appeared in the rear door, escorting Rahana on each side of them. Sholey's heart raced with excitement as she gazed directly into Rahane's brown eyes. Rahane stood completely still as the 2 guards left her alone and walked to the corner of the room. Sholey immediately noticed that Rahane wasn't feeling well. Her face was plush white and pale. Today, Rahane was beautiful dressed in blue jean trousers and a navy blue shirt. Her head was covered with a brand new white shawl peppered with tiny colorful butterflies that were carefully sewn into the material. She was also wearing a navy blue chador that was decorated with small white flowers. The chador was draped over her head, extending down across her shoulders and the length of her body. As always, Rahane looked elegant and stylish, standing tall at 5'9", looking like a beautiful bride on her wedding day. Rahane appeared calm and collected without emotion, staring intently into the faces of her family that had gathered together in the tiny office room. Sharay gazed proudly toward her sister. She had always remembered Rahane as strong as a mountain, never showing her emotions. She was so much like her father, Feridun, a person of very few words. "Come here," Sholey calmly insisted, pointing toward a large armchair at the front of the conference table. "I want you to sit on my lap." For the first time since she entered the room, Rahane's face beamed with joy. "I am too heavy. Your lap will ache," Rahane replied with a childish grin on her face. Sholey remembered back in April when Rahane was suddenly scheduled to be executed. She had rushed to the prison for the last time. At that time, she had asked her to sit on her lap, and Rahane responded in an offensive tone, saying, "No, I am not a child." Today, however, Rahane had willingly surrendered to her mother's wishes. She calmly walked over to the armchair and graciously sat down on her mother's lap. Sholey was overcome with emotion. She struggled to hold back the tears. For the first time in over 6 months, she could actually touch her daughter once again and hold her in her arms. Today, there wasn't a glass pane separating them as in other visitations. As she laid her head against Rahane's chest, hugging her tightly, Sholey could feel her body's warmth. It was unusually hot. She gently placed her hand across her forehead. "Rahane, you are sick. You have a fever." Rahane remained silent and lethargic. She did her best to stay calm. Sholi wrapped her arms back around her sick daughter and began gently kissing her on the forehead. She remembered when Rahane was six, they had seen a pair of pigeons living on the roof of their house, and sometimes when they looked, the pigeons would put their beaks together to kiss each other. Since that memorable time, Sholi would kiss Rahane on the lips, imitating the pigeons on their roof. She laughingly referred to this kiss as the pigeon's kiss. Today, they would practice this together until Rahane turned 19. And then, of course, the magical kissing game fade away with maturity. However, today, and what could be the last day Sholi would ever embrace her daughter, she pigeon-kissed her with a motherly delight once again. Embracing Rahane today, Sholi's mind drifted back to the first day that she held her in her arms as a newborn baby. It was a wonderful and indescribable feeling. Today, she refused to stop hugging her. Sholi refused to let go. Sholi raised her head up from Rahane's chest and gazed deeply into her brown eyes. Rahane, what would you like me to do? Rahane remained silent as she nervously played with the string at the end of her shawl. Sholi asked once again, this time with an insistent tone in her voice, what would you like me to do for you? Rahane smiled graciously and bent over, whispering in her mother's ear for fear that the guards were listening. Nothing. Sholi felt helpless. She desperately wanted to say or do anything to give her daughter hope and to ease her mind. Why don't you ask me for anything? What food do you want? I don't want anything, Rahane calmly answered. In an instant, her mood changed. Rahane now had a look of frustration in her eyes. Do not ask to postpone the execution. Let it end. Sholi's face of hope melted in despair. She struggled to contain her emotions. She noticed the look of hopelessness in Rahane's eyes. How long would I be able to live? 80 years, 100, or 150 years? How long must I suffer? Sholi pulled Rahane's head firmly against her chest and gently kissed her forehead. She had no words to offer her daughter. Deep down inside, her heart was breaking, overflowing with indescribable sadness and pain. All she could do right now was to hold Rahane tightly, just like she did the day that she was born. Shahrzad had been watching and patiently waiting for her turn to connect with Rahane. After an hour, Rahane finally stood up and passionately embraced her sister. Shahrzad couldn't hold back the tears as she hugged her sister tightly. You will come home, Shahrzad confidently said. Rahane sat down in the large armchair and invited Shahrzad to sit on her lap. Shahrzad excitedly sat down on her sister's lap and immediately flashed her hand in front of her face. This is your ring, Rahane. Rahane carefully gazed back at the tiny ring on Shahrzad's middle finger. It was a white gold ring with 9 diamond-like carats brightly glistening in her eyes. Her grandmother had given it to Sholi, and in turn, Sholi had given the ring to Rahane several years ago. Rahane had worn it in prison until one day the guard confiscated it and insisted that she return it to her family. Since that time, Shahrzad had been proudly wearing it, waiting for the day to give it back to her sister once she was released. This ring belongs to you, Shahrzad proclaimed. You must come home and get your ring. Please don't doubt at all that you will come back. Shahrzad was filled with hope and optimism that Rahane would soon be released. She was confident that Jalal Sarabandi would forgive Rahane at the last minute before the execution. Rahane quietly listened and did not respond. Suddenly, Shahrzad's eyes beamed with excitement. When you come back home, we will be roommates again. I will give you back your ring and all of your clothes, Shahrzad promised. I asked God to preserve you, and I am sure he will give you back to us. Rahane was overcome with emotion. She couldn't hold back the tears. Shahrzad had rarely seen Rahane cry, but at this moment, she melted at the words of hope her sister had said to her. Shahrzad reached in her pocket and gently wiped the tears away from Rahane's face with a tissue paper. "Don't cry, Shahrer," Rahane's other sister excitedly interrupting. "You will laugh at these tears on our Sunday visit." Shahrzad embraced Rahane, kissing her on the lips while holding her tight. Her heart was overflowing with hope that God would intervene and spare her life. It was nearly 5 p.m. The allotted time for the last visitation was rapidly coming to an end. Rahane stared at the clock on the wall. She noticed her father, Feridun, anxiously waiting to hold her. Shahrzad gently kissed her sister for the last time and climbed down from off of her lap. Rahane gazed intently into her father's eyes. He was standing a few feet away from the armchair. Feridun was her hero. They were so much alike. Both of them lived a simple and quiet life, calm and reserved, and like her father, Rahane was a person of few words. Rahane finally stood up from the armchair and gracefully walked up to her father with dignity and poise, like a bride on her wedding day. Feridun tightly embraced his daughter. Rahane rested her head against his chest, refusing to let go. "Be strong, Rahane," Feridun admonished her, fighting back the tears. He gazed deeply into her brown eyes. "Remember, you are Kurdish, and Kurdish girls are strong, strong like a mountain." Rahane's eyes began to fill up with tears. She nodded her head in agreement with what her father had just said. Then she whispered softly into his ears, "Daddy, I will not deny that he was going to rape me. I will not lie." Feridun embraced Rahane tightly once again. He knew his daughter never lied. She was not guilty. For 7 long years, the evil regime had been brutally persistent, using psychological torture to force Rahane to change her original story in order to clear Sarbandi's reputation. Once again, Rahane whispered into her father's ears to conceal what she was saying from the guards. "I am sure I will not be back. Please take care of Mom." Rahane's final words pierced through Feridun's heart like a sharp knife. He did not want to accept that his daughter would be hanged. The family was holding out hope that the international campaign would somehow put pressure on the government, and once again, the execution would be miraculously postponed. As Rahane held tightly onto her father, she noticed an Aunt Nafis emerging from one of the spare rooms inside of the office. Upon her arrival, she had immediately stepped into the small room to say afternoon prayers for Rahane. Today was a rare occasion for Aunt Nafis to visit her niece. Since Rahane's case was so political, she had been banned from visitation because of her job as a university teacher. However, today an exception had been made in Nafis's favor to visit her niece for the last time to say goodbye. Rahane tightly embraced Aunt Nafis, kissing her on the cheeks. After a few moments, they both sat down across from each other and held hands. Suddenly, two female guards interrupted their conversation. It was 5:15 p.m. The visit had ended, and it was time for Rahane to leave. Rahane reluctantly stood up. The room became utterly quiet for a few moments. Then Aunt Nafis stood up and looked deeply into Rahane's eyes. "I trust in God," Nafis proclaimed. "God will bring you back between my arms." Rahane was hurriedly escorted away swiftly between the two female guards. Aunt Nafis quickly poured a glass of water onto the floor behind Rahane as she was escorted away. Pouring water behind someone was a sacred ritual that was supposed to provide safety for the traveler's journey. Aunt Nafis noticed that Rahane turned her head back around to catch a final glimpse of her family. Nafis closed her eyes and folded her hands in prayer, trusting that God would bring her back into her arms. This is the reading from my book, Rahane, A Beautiful Fragrance, that you can purchase on Amazon. That was the last visit, a horribly difficult painful time, Rahane did not return. Everyone had been praying and trusting. I want to feature a song right now to take us to the end of the program, an appropriate song by Michael W. Smith of Healing Rain. This is the best song I can play to bring healing to the hurt and pain of Rahane's death. God bless you. I will see you again this Thursday for part four of Remembering Rahane on the Cross in the Desert. Have an incredible week.
Healing rain is coming down. It's coming nearer to this old town. Rich and poor, weak and strong. It's bringing mercy. It won't be long. Healing rain is coming down. It's coming closer to the lost and found. Tears of joy and tears of shame are washed forever in Jesus' name. Come so